Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Pro Advocate Radio, brought to you by My Advocate Center.
And welcome to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, James O'Brien, and Deb Beecham, founder and director of My Advocate Center. And we've got a room full and a special guest here today. Deb, tell folks what we're doing.
Hey, James, this is Deb Beecham, founder and director of My Advocate Center here in Atlanta. And we have a kind of a different show today. We're focusing here on Business Radio X and Buckhead on a business where you know that our business is helping families and family law professionals improve the process around conflict resolution. So as I was getting to know more people in Atlanta, and I have a lot of friends in the business community, and I heard this story that just set me back on my heels. And I said, oh, you mean there's businesses that are having a hard time because somebody decided to pick on them and knock their legs out from under them? I thought that just happened to families. So when I was introduced to Mike Daugherty, is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Mike told me a story, and he said, here's my book. And I looked at it, and it says, The Devil Inside the Beltway. And I said, that sounds exactly like the kind of book I want to read. So, anyway, I'm going to read his bio for you. And I hope that you will stay with us for the entire show. And I have a feeling that once you get a sense for what's going on here, you'll want to listen to this again. But just in case you have to jump off here for a minute, make sure you go to www.thedevilinsidethebeltway.com and follow Mike at on Twitter at DaughertyMJ, and that's DaughertyMJ. So Michael J. Daugherty is the founder, president, and CEO of LabMD. And if you're familiar with the medical community here in Atlanta, you may know the company LabMD. I certainly did. So LabMD is a cancer detection laboratory based in Atlanta, Georgia, as well as the author of the book, The Devil Inside the Beltway. It's a shocking expose of the U.S. government's surveillance and overreach into cybersecurity, medicine, and small business. Mike will rivet you about his blood-in-the-water battle with the Federal Trade Commission over their relentless investigation into LabMD's data security practices. And I'm just going to interject here that this would make you think that Mike and his company actually did something wrong, right? Well, listen on. It's an insider's look at how agencies exploit the Administrative Procedure Act to grab for power by exploiting the small and weak to control the big and powerful. You'll hear about Mike's shrewd investigation of the investigator, FTC, which resulted in a House oversight investigation, so now Mike's my hero, and it's a stinging congressional report about the FTC's behavior and criminal immunity from the Justice Department for a whistleblower. The administrative case, stayed in June 2014 when the whistleblower pled the fifth, starts again May 5th, now that immunity has been granted. Mike exposes the real-time maneuvers of government layers and regulators who are accustomed to no one looking. Does that sound familiar, James?
Very familiar.
Okay. So because of his work, Mike has testified before the House of Representatives House Oversight Committee and regularly keynotes in front of the healthcare, law, business, and technology audience, educating them on what to expect when the federal and government investigate you. He holds a BA in economics from the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, regularly blogs at MichaelJDaugherty.com, and sits on the board of Snoopall, a privacy company based in Nashua. Is that right?
Nashua.
Nashua. Thank you. Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm from Miami. he is also a pilot, which makes him kind of a smart guy in my book. He's a pilot and he resides in Atlanta, Georgia. But for the most part, you're in D.C., aren't you, Mike?
That's my unfortunate second home for the past 2 years, yeah.
Okay.
At least a week a month.
Yeah. So thank you for standing up and talking about what's been going on with your business.
Thank you.
Why don't you share with us how this got started.
Yeah, the big picture on this is that I'm making lemonades out of lemons, and I'm clanging the bell because I want to make sure people understand the playbook in the government agencies. And this playbook is a very common playbook with anyone that's a bully with power in the judicial system or government. And and really, it's about intimidation and draining you dry. When we don't encounter the legal system, and I find that true for family court, especially with women that have never had any professional background. They've been working mothers, and they've worked in the home the whole time. And they have the assumption that so many of us should be able to have, is that our government's on our side and that we're going to get fairness. And you really have to be a very concerned, educated person. And that's what I'm about to do, to educate through my story, make some sort of positive out of it.
Wonderful.
Well, yeah, because we've all watched Matlock and all the TV dramas, and the good guys always come out on top. The truth always comes out. All the professionals are acting properly, and that's not the way it works.
That's not how it works. And unfortunately, and yet I've met very many great congressmen, bad congressmen, judges, bad judges, lawyers, bad judges. But you know, you don't sit there and not pay an active part in educating yourself. You're not sitting in a restaurant and they're coming to wait on you. That is the exact way to get fleeced and abused. And so part of the reason I did this was to turn a negative into a positive by educating others and also fighting back. And it's been incredible. So if I can just start that to let all the listeners know, I mean, LabMD was a private laboratory that I founded in 96. By the time 2008 rolled around, we had a national client base, close to 40 employees, and basically urologist offices all around the country, Federal expressed blood, urine, and tissue to us for analysis. Our differentiation as a small private company was our technology, so that they could handle, they could get expert pathologists to just read that type of cancer, reading it, and that they could capitalize on our software that would manage their managed care, so they wouldn't have so many problems with where does this need to go to? Because insurance started taking control over the physician's office about 15 years ago. That was a differentiation that made the company very successful. We're not interested in market share. We were interested in quality and obviously profit margin. And so we weren't interested in going public or being famous. And out of the blue, as we are running a very nice niche boutique business and getting a lot of personal reward as well for the type of work we were doing. It was a win-win for everybody. The phone rang like a movie, and it was a guy named Robert Baubick from a company called Tyversa in Pittsburgh saying he is the CEO of a cyber intelligence company, and they have found one of our files on a peer-to-peer network. Now, keep in mind, folks, this is 2008, where no one really used the word breach. We thought that was a breach birth. You know, no one used the word cybersecurity. What was that? And so my first question, of course, is, who are you? Now, of course, I didn't speak to him. My vice president did. And you'll see in the book, immediately I didn't trust him because my background, which suddenly was paying off for the first time, was I was raised with two people that met when they were police officers in Detroit. And my life was, and my dad was a police officer till he retired in homicide. He was an inspector. My entire social network of my family was really judges and lawyers and police officers. So I used to seeing my dad rail against the TV screen when you see shows like Matlock going, that's a bunch of blah, blah, blah. It's not how it happens in the real world. And so I was not naive at all. And my first question was, who are you and prove it? Now, also, we were just terrified that our patient information was out. We're just terrified because we're young guns. We're a young, aggressive company with good stuff. And so he sent it, and it was 9,000 of our patients. But he wouldn't tell us how he got it until we hired him at $475 an hour. No IP addresses, no nothing. Like, we're supposed to just trust a guy that says, I got your stuff.
Right.
In medicine. Right. So, and then when he was backing up and wouldn't say anything, and since I would only speak to him in email, there was no conversation. Because here's a lesson I've learned in business, folks. Email or anything in writing avoids this memory loss in the past or spinning. So I always politely say it's in the interest of avoiding future miscommunications and understandings, which really means in case you're a liar, I need to have you nailed down. So that moves to some, the book starts out that way, but leaping over his trying to friendly, seduce us with subtle fear tactics of telling us everything's where it's out there. We started looking for it. We never found the file out there in cyberspace anywhere. I mean, to this day, 7 years later. Now, we did find a peer-to-peer sharing software in the office that was installed on the workstation before the employee that was using it was employed with the company, so we don't know how it got there, but she was using it, listening to music, against company policy, against the handbooks, against knowing she shouldn't do it, but she shouldn't do it because we don't listen to music when we're at work in a medical laboratory. Now, she was in the billing office. She wasn't handling any tissue. So that's the rule she thought she was breaking. She had no time thought that anything was going on was going to make patients vulnerable. So we secured the entire place. We found that the only potential leak, we got rid of that. She no longer worked with the organization. We hunkered down, and then we were at a standoff with this guy for about a year and a half. And we never found it, but he did call. His attorney called the end of 2008 and said they were turning this over to the Federal Trade Commission. Now, we're subject as a healthcare provider to Health and Human Services and CLIA and the Georgia Department of Human Resources Division that inspects laboratories. We don't know who the Federal Trade Commission is. But we got a call in 2010, and my side joke on that was that was world record time for a government agency to contact us a year and a half later and just say, and this was the beginning of life-changing events. I will never be the same. Cryptically, this man who I now know very well, named Alan Shear, who's a director and a lawyer and inspector for the FTC, says very quickly to my VP, this is Alan Shear with the Federal Trade Commission. We'll be sending you a letter about a non-public inquiry. It'll be arriving tomorrow. Do you have any questions? Click. And I mean, they are very compact and tight and intentional in their communications. And the next day, 11 pages, single spaces show up. And then comes the hiring the lawyers and answering the government questions. And you have to answer the government questions very carefully.
So now that you've brought up lawyers and that you're entering that realm, I'm going to make sure our audience knows we have a special guest, Emily Rowell, with Atlanta Legal Experts in here. So now you can understand why I thought this would be intriguing. This is something that, you know, as this unfolds, because this is an ongoing story.
Sure, sure.
And so thanks for being here, Emily.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Yeah, feel free, interject, this is... As much
I may just
area.
Be lost in the story, but I will comment.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is an amazing story.
So I'm glad Mike's been able to meet Emily and Rich Casanova here. So I'll let you continue on. But
that's good. And let me talk about communication story, by the way, because when I decided to write this, I had to study story. And when we tell stories, what we do with our audience is we bring them on our side and we build ways that they can relate. So I intentionally told the book as a narrative nonfiction, like a novel. It's written like a novel because some people aren't so political, or they're afraid of conflict, or they're not really into the law, or they get... So I wanted to be edutaining for everyone. So, and I actually met three lawyers that left the practice of law and write... fiction legal thrillers. And they were phenomenal in saying what you do is you never, in a chapter, when something happens, you never let the people know. And they said, it's like the phone rings in your chapter and don't answer it. Let the reader wonder. They'll love you for that because everyone loves to be thrilled and not put it down. People love, they like the excitement of it. And so it's something else. So I've met a lot of good educating lawyers, and I've met a lot of them, and I wish they'd go open a restaurant or something. But anyway, and we can talk about that in another show too. I got a lot to say about that. But anyway, so
we can have another show
about that. And everyone loves my book except for lawyers are so thin skinned. Everyone goes, well, I think you're very fair to lawyers. And the lawyers always like, you hate lawyers. And I'm like, no, I don't. Anyway, but they're very thin skinned.
Just the bad ones.
Just the bad ones. Just the corrupt guys. But anyway, So at that point, the FTC started regulating, and we were still naive. We get, as a medical facility, we're regulated every year. And honestly, we love the state of Georgia regulators. We had years of great relations with them. Professional, honest, based on science, non-threatening, everything you'd want, everything that would thrill a Democrat. I mean, these guys were just great. And they were great. We thought the ones in California were just crazy. And, but Georgia was just such a great, well-run organization. So we were naive, like, come on in, regulator. Hey, here's everything. And we dumped 5,000 pages on them. I mean everything, server documents, analysis, history of training, all that stuff. We thought, I have to laugh at myself now. We thought, won't they be impressed? Ha, ha, ha. And after 2 months, we had our first call after we answered everything, which, of course, the lawyer bills start to come in because that's the lawyers have to review every word. Mm-hmm. And we're a small company, you know, and the first thing out of the mouth is they're upset. They're like, you didn't answer our questions. Now, I had a long-term relationship with my lawyer. She's 15 years and she's fantastic. And I'm the big picture CEO business guy. She is anal retentive, linear, boom. She is sharp and she knows how to answer a question the right way. So I thought this is a game. So we only would communicate with the FTC in writing after that because we didn't trust that they were going to move the story if you just talked to them. And that was another year and a half of just trying to really be nice and give them everything they want and be cooperative to make them go away. Because, and this is where I was shocked, because the FTC was on our door because of Section 5 of the FTC Act that says they are responsible to protect consumers from unfairness and deception. They get to decide what that, they get to decide what the definition of unfairness and deception is. And they were arguing that we might have had unfair data security practices, and they wanted to find that out, but they wouldn't tell us what unfair was. They would only put consent decrees in front. And what I was confusedly learning the game and observing the playbook, and I wanted to record the playbook so everyone else in front of me in the business world would not be caught off guard. Because I'll tell you, big law firms, some of them love the playbook because it's billable hours. So they don't want you to know either. So I want everyone in the business world to understand this and the public. And I want to separate the good lawyers from the bad lawyers, because there's a lot of good law firms that have contacted me that want to educate their clients and don't want them stuck. And then there's some that I've met that are really thrilled about sucking up to the regulator so they can have a good relationship later and maybe hire people off from there and build the big corporations a lot of money, and the game goes on. So in this instance, Section 5 was this quicksand quagmire that you just fell into, and we I was blown away that you could be guilty of breaking a law when there'd been no injured party and there was no proof that the file was anywhere. And they flew us into D.C. and they started talking about consent decrees. Well, consent decrees are nothing more than contracts, I've learned, right? You just sign a contract with the government and you consent. It's a fancy name, but it's just an agreement. And the agreement states that you agree to allow them to audit you for 2 decades, 20 years.
Oh, nice.
And they, at your expense, which is a couple $100,000 a year, from an outside consulting firm. We can have a whole nother show about the fear of consulting firms. And that you just roll over. And, oh, they'll have a press release that goes out that says you've agreed to be audited for cybersecurity practices. Now, and I'm dealing with surgeons who have no attention span, and they're terrified they're going to have a lab that doesn't know how to protect their data. And I've got very aggressive competitors that are multi-billion dollar companies who I'm knocking out of the park because we're so small and nimble. So they would love to take that press release out. Mm-hmm. And it's psychological warfare, it's reputation assassination, and it is the gun they hold to your head. But buried in the fine print says there's no admission of wrongdoing.
Right. And let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, James O'Brien, and Deb Beecham. And Deb, introduce our roundtable, because we got a lot of them in here today.
We do. We have Mike Daugherty here from LabMD, and we have Emily Rowell, the host of Atlanta Legal Experts, and I'm Deb Beecham with My Advocate Center.
And Mike, we'll let you get back to telling your story. You know, it's interesting to me that they're going to tell you they're looking for something, but they're not going to tell you what they're looking for until they see what they had to find. It's like, let me make up the rules once I know what I found, and I'll make that wrong.
And you feel like you're doing the investigation for them. I invite them to Atlanta. They wouldn't even come. They just want us to send everything, and answer the. You're like, wait a minute. I'm answering their own. It's like send it in, mail it in,
right.
and it's costing a fortune. Now, the consent decree was terrifying because it was assassination. So I knew I couldn't go that way. Kept telling my lawyers, I'm not going to sign anything. And they were like patting me on the head as if I was some naive guy. And this is the big time, folks. And this is how we roll in D.C. But we'll worry about your temper later when you see your alternative. And wow. And so that was it was a nightmare. And I kept it very tight with just a couple of my managers. And it ripped the heart out of them because they're
patriotic Americans that work in medicine since they got out of school. And mm-hmm. this is not what's supposed to happen. And you have to see it to believe it. It is very unbelievable. Even people in Congress, staffers, people in different various departments of the government that I've spoken to now, the first word out of their mouth is unbelievable, because so rarely is this story told. This is the type of things that people bully down. And I don't know. So yeah, it was amazing they wouldn't tell us. And it was amazing to hear my lawyer say, yeah, they don't have to tell you.
Right.
Like, what?
They play by their own set of rules, and they make them up as they go along, is what it all boils down to. And for those wondering why we're covering this on Pro Advocate Radio, is it is basically the same thing that's happened in the family court system. You know, there's so much oversight in the criminal realm of the court system, but there's way more shenanigans going on in the other realms of the court system because it's not looked at. The press isn't doing stories on this. The press isn't doing stories on families. They're doing stories on if somebody might have gotten convicted wrongly, but this doesn't play. So there's way more openings for bad stuff to happen in these other court situations, because there's just not the oversight.
Right, and you've got, as Don Henley says, you have to give them dirty laundry. And you have to get, they want to sell eyeballs. They're selling eyeballs, and eyeballs is roadkill. And roadkill has to be in a tweet or 2 minutes. And you can't learn about the whole government situation in a tweet or 2 minutes. So, but ironically, when you push back, there's a whole lot of drama that comes down the road, which is incredible, that does give them things to munch on. It just takes a long time. You have to take years. But anyway, the next step really was just trying to be nice and make them go away, and that was a year and a half. And then they said, "We want to enter a negotiation for consent decree." So it wasn't until the end of 2011 when I told them the word they've never heard before, which was no. I won't even negotiate.
They don't like no.
They don't like no. And then they threatened all these things, and you see their posturing. Now, it was fascinating because they're not used to you not being afraid. That is very unsettling to them, and they certainly don't like that you're going to tell other people. So this turned into a one versus one small company, to an FTC's battle to protect its power and reputation by making sure you don't tell. And so then they do they're going at me really guns blazing, because it's bigger than just me now. I mean, if I teach corporations how these people operate, that's a big step up and advantage to the lawyers as well. I mean, most lawyers do not understand how the administrative state works because they don't have experience with it. And right. When they get in it, they're as baffled as anybody else. And that's what happened with my lawyer. She was like, I don't get how these people think. We've got to find someone that worked with them that knows. And we did that. We hired DC lawyers, and that was another unfortunate lesson in the inside the beltway dance between law firms and big companies and agencies and government lawyers. These are people that are in another world. You're the only visitor. Right. They know each other long term. There's future cases. They want to go along to get along. The law firm doesn't want to have a bad relationship with the agency. The agency lawyers might want a job at that law firm later because the agency lawyers know who's making the big money. So these people are all, you know, it's like that Bugs Bunny, Wile E. Coyote thing where they fight like crazy and they go the clock and punch in and out, and then they go right. And have a drink together. And, you know, and you're sitting there going, what the heck is going on? I have a cancer detection center that's going down, and these people are treating it like it's sport.
Right.
Well, that's scary.
It's what we see in family court all the time, Deb, right. Is it is, you know, I equate it to hunting. You know, these lawyers see it as a sport. A hunter sees hunting as a sport. The deer, not so much.
Right. Exactly.
But in this case, in your story and in some of the stories we're telling, what we're pointing out is that there's cooperation.
There is. And also justification and rationalization. That's
yeah,
right.
It's disconcerting. And I mean, I couldn't believe that this was happening to your business. I mean, this is a business that you want to see succeed and grow, not take out of play.
I was going to say that. Like, you're just going along.
Right.
Your things are pretty good, you know. And then all of a sudden.
Out of the blue. Boom.
And now this whole, your life is just completely turned upside down.
Right. And I would say that more people don't have the timing, the upbringing, the attitude, and the money to, so it was the perfect storm. I also then, I truly felt an obligation to do something about this. It was that egregious. Anybody, like if I allowed someone to destroy a cancer detection center for an agenda that's as much political as it is just their own power, then I'm part of the problem. And so I had, I knew that I could turn it into something. So, and that's what I've been trying to do. But you have to, when you're the victim of something and you're saying this, you have to be very aware that people are going to think that, that you're inviting them to your funeral so that they will weep with you. And that is not what you're doing. But some people will think that, and they'll, right, they'll back away. They'll be afraid of conflict. And you have to really understand that, and you have to be careful not to give them that impression too much. A lot of them are going to think of it anyway. But you just have to ignore it for a while and keep pushing. But that's what can happen when you're the one clanging the bell. But in the beginning, you don't have a choice.
Well, and the other part we haven't even touched on is the consumers that are harmed by this, because obviously you were delivering something that your bigger competitors weren't delivering, which was very defined testing. And so now you've got consumers that potentially have cancer being denied the best possible care.
And this is the danger of lawyers and agencies that don't have education in medicine or technology. They don't know what they don't know, but they've got a lot of power. And you can't convince them of anything. These people have drunk the Kool-Aid, and they think they are saving the world by doing this. And these, I mean, with all due respect, and I'm sure I have bias hanging out here, but when I see anyone come out, I don't care what your degree is, these people happen to be lawyers, but when you come out of academia and you stick in that bubble and you have never run a business or never worked in medicine or never worked in technology, and then you don't have anything wired in your brain to be able to relate to what you're trying to do. This is why we got along with the state of Georgia regulators, because they were all people that worked in that sphere. They understood what they were doing. These people are so arrogant. Mm-hmm. They will go in to a medical facility and mess with it. That is terrifying, without knowledge. That's how arrogant they are. And that's dangerous. And that's the bigger picture on people to understand, is we have handed over the baton to people that are willing to swing it. With it. Well, we've given the scalpel to someone that's willing to cut without knowing what right. they're doing.
Well, that makes me think we should have another show on this. And Emily, you're going to have may have some ideas on lawyers, but I think we need to have a roundtable discussion about, because you had a good experience in Georgia and we have the right professionals, you know, in the agency in Georgia, why don't we have a conversation with them and let them ask the questions and say, how do we protect our Georgia businesses?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, that would be, I'd love it if they'd show. It'd be great.
Because yeah. we are, you know, Business Radio X is pro-business. So taking it that side of it is...
Yeah, it's important to do. It's all about education, and I just happen to be the one to stand up. But I have to, you know, also I'm an entrepreneur, so, and I also worked in surgery and medicine for years. So it's hard for me to feel like a victim, which sometimes bothers my lawyers, because it is a terrible thing. It's not okay. It was a tsunami. My company now is gone. All those people lost their jobs. All those doctors had to find different labs. All those patients had now have that database of history that they don't have access to much. You know, I mean, they can if they come looking for it, but it's not automatic. This is important that people understand that this shouldn't happen anymore. And that's where it's in other people's self-interest to learn. Because one of the things that everyone is going to say that's been through a bad family court, and there's a long list of those, or a bad regulatory issue is, wow, had I only known. Right. If you, the second you get that knock on the door, it is way too late.
Right.
You have got to know ahead of time.
This, we have such a strong entrepreneurial community and technology community here in Atlanta, venture capital. People are focused on marketing and raising funds and growing and growing and growing. There's not as much conversation about protecting.
Right.
So, and learning how to advocate for yourself should something go wrong. So I think this is,
well,
you know.
Well, we've had a recent explosion in patent lawsuits in this country, where patents are being challenged left and right. And, you know, I believe I read 25% of all those cases happen in one court district in East Texas.
Really?
So you've got to ask yourself, what is going on in that court district where everybody feels like it's appropriate to file there? And a lot of them are in technology, because it becomes very ambiguous.
Sure.
A lot of the...
crossing.
Right. So what happens is, it's similar to your situation. They make an accusation. Most people settle. because they don't want to go down the rabbit hole. And, you know, it equates to nothing more than extortion.
And it's jury profiling. It's taking everything. I mean, they're so far ahead of us in the analysis of this. I mean, they do it every single day. You might do it once in a lifetime. Practice makes perfect. Mm-hmm. It's not a fair fight. So what I was also, I missed my earlier point that as an entrepreneur, I feel also more prepared to be completely destroyed and rebuild. And so now I rebuild myself as an author, a speaker, a teacher, and I'll see how that business will go. Because I do think there's value to others to learn so that they will be protected in the future. And we can change this. I can tell you, we've seen the FCC pull this in the last couple of months where they're trying to control the internet, use a legal loophole, then they justify that's okay. There's no morality. There is no, this is just, so this is a chess game and there's no right or wrong on either side.
Rich Casanova over here, producer for Business Radio X. Quick question for you, Michael. You mentioned about you get the knock on the door, it's too late, right?
Mm-hmm.
That just really resonated for a lot of reasons, and I think listeners and business owners would understand that. What advice would you give a business owner to prevent that knock on the door, or if you could rewind, what would you have done differently?
Well, my situation, really, you couldn't have. I was in a perfect storm. But in the big picture, you just have to understand. You read. You do things that you should do when the pressure's off that any business person should do. You don't like your lawyer? Get rid of them. You don't trust them? Leave. Build relationships with strong people. Learn about other things. Those are the network to a good group of people so that in case, because they're there.
But in your case, I mean, there was potentially yes or no, not red flags. It did really come out of the blue.
It came out of the blue.
But from your life lesson now, is there something that should be a key indicator that a business like, I mean, the person that inadvertently created the leak, if you will, right? I mean, would that be a takeaway to prevent that?
No, or? Because ironically, what we've learned is, first of all, that is what people hear, but that software was already on there before she got there. And later in the book, I talk about
don't give away the ending here.
No, it's okay. It's okay because people make that assumption. And when you write the book like a thrilly, I left that till the end.
Sure.
But the U.S. Patent and Trade Office, and it's, I always like to use third party so people don't think I have skin in the game, but there's the U.S. Patent and Trade Office had a full study and report on this. And that software was intended malware. She did not put that file out there. Wow. It was built to dupe. And now this is much more believable now than 2 years ago even, of that we are under attack all over the place and there's no such thing as perfect security. We are way behind the bad guys, way behind. And so are the feds.
So would a firm do themselves a favor to hire internal auditors or third parties to kind of monitor this on a regular basis?
And we did that. We had all that. No, just blank happens, folks. I mean, the White House just got nailed, and so the State Department. This is, sometimes things go wrong. But
the Secretary of State's emails. Right,
yeah. Right. Well, that was that's another show. Story.
Yeah. I think we're almost time for a break right now, actually. So, James,
and we can segue off the
we'll
Hillary.
Segue
that'll
that
save
one.
Us all. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me remind our listeners: you are listening to Pro Advocate Radio with your host James O'Brien and Deb Beacham, founder and director of My Advocate Center, and we have an awesome panel here talking about Mike Daugherty's book, "Devil Inside the Beltway." And Mike, why don't you jump back in and continue the story and tell us a little more?
All right, let me give you let me plug the books on Amazon, and it's an ebook, an audiobook, and hardcover and softcover. So any way you want it, you got it. We'll say Amazon just put the ebook on sale for $5.99, so it's there, and it's a great page turner, and it's edutainment. It's scary, but it's true. So, to speed this up, at that point, this is at the end of 2011, we had sued Tyversa and Dartmouth in federal court for violations of the Georgia Computer Protection Law. And this is the danger of, and this is where I see myself as like an early adapter leader in this, is that I've had to like go into a lot of unknown areas, and I think I'm built for it, so it's fine. But the courts are way behind in cybersecurity regulation. And Judge Forrester, who just passed away, may he rest in peace, I think made a terrible decision. And he decided that there was no cybersecurity law directly on point with what was going on, where someone came into our workstation and took a file out from another state. No law about that. That's new stuff. And so he ruled, well, we have to use similar on point law, which is harassment and telephonic harassment, and also general harassment. And those are considered jurisdictional where the perpetrator is. Well, they said, well, the perpetrator would be in Pennsylvania. So this is dismissed because it shouldn't be filed in Georgia. Now, everyone looks back on that case and goes, that's a horrendous decision, but it is what it is. And the Court of Appeals supported that because that's a whole nother show.
Patting each other on the back.
Learning judges can make mistakes, and if they're not huge or egregious, thank you, then they get away with it. And so this is like, okay. This is a bad decision for Georgia. And in a few years, you look back in the rear view mirror and go, mm-hmm. And so we lost, and we had to wait to refile that. So, but we also had that entire story in that lawsuit got put in front of the FTC. Now, I'm doing my own research on this by this point. At this point, I'm like, my lawyers can't come to my rescue on this. Not that they can't, and I'm not going to pay them to. Because that's a really, give a lawyer the word research and cash and mortgage your house. So yippee, research, whew, billable time. The long story short is I did my own research, and here's what I learned in the summer of 2010, actually. Homeland Security gave $24 million to Dartmouth University to research cybersecurity leaks. And who did they use to work with them on this project? The company that called me that took my file, Tyversa. Mm. And so you see, and then you see the connection. And then I see that this gentleman on the phone with me, Robert Bobick, is sitting in front of House Oversight in 2007, testifying in front of House Oversight about these leaks. And who's sitting next to him? The FTC and U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And who's on his advisory board testifying with him? General Wesley Clark. Well, I'm like, this is all in the bag, folks. This is mm-hmm. So then I find Oversight hearings in 2009 in 2000 and at Commerce in 2009. So there's three congressional hearings where Robert Bobick is there, and the 2009 ones, he has my file and he puts it up redacted. So he is testifying and using my file that he took as an example.
That blew me away.
And that you think it blew you away. I'm like, everyone thinks I'm already crazy about this, and I'm saying all this conspiracy stuff, and now thank goodness I brought them the burnt broom. Here it is, folks. And I thought, I'm going to crack the case. And they said, doesn't matter. That the law is you don't have to have a victim. You could be breaking Section 5 just by having the potential of it happening. So all the regulators did was throw it in reverse and pull their accusations back, but still say we broke Section 5. Now, I wasn't taking this sitting down because I was nervous for the country as well, because I felt like this guy's bad news. And he's testifying in front of Congress. So then I find our file in the Dartmouth healthcare study. And then I find it in Wired magazine. This is all going on behind my back before. And this is crazy.
They're publicizing the news that they've discovered something wrong with your company.
And they put, not my company, because they don't mention the company, but they are using it to build a marketplace and fear. And they're acting like the good guy. Now, here was and they put a press release out. That said, Tyversa put a press release out in 2009 that said they were working with a university and a partially government-funded study, and they were monitoring 4.5 million workstations worldwide, a private company, and they have downloaded 14 million files. Now, what is a private company monitoring? And they're not downloading music. They're downloading military tax returns, medical, financial, and they're saying this is this gargantuan problem. If that press release would have come out today, people would have gone crazy. But we were too naive at the time. So, do you have a question?
This sounds like what was going on with the mob back in the 20s and 30s.
Well, it's old as the hills,
you know. And unfortunately, their bouncer, their enforcer, their guy who's going to come break your legs happens to be the federal government.
Well, and that's it. And there's a dance that we know that you observe. And I'll tell you, and this is where the media and the public in a lot of parts of this country, especially with this administration, think businesses are bad. You're default guilty till proven innocent. And so businesses getting beat up stories don't fly. Corporations. Okay. If you say corporation, no. If you say small business and medical facility, which we were, mm-hmm. this is a different story. But, you know, and so there, before I was there, there were 37 other consent decrees signed by victims of the FTC's investigations. A lot of them really lost data. Our situation is I brought experts in and they said, wait a minute, the government came in and took it. It's nowhere out there. perfect security is not even possible. Right. They came into your workstation. You've been violated. They've broken the law. And they've got all sorts of power to circle and confuse when you go after them for breaking the law. Plus, when you say the government broke the law, no one believes you. They think you're wearing a metal hat. So it took more work. I still had to keep digging. And so again, I just want them to go away. So we fought in court for another year and a half over them making me sit for an interview. I'll skip over that, except that it was now game on. We are at war with each other. Mm-hmm. And then I just wanted to show everyone. So now it is David and Goliath. And let me tell you the way Goliath treats David. You know, when they think no one's looking, it's shameful. Mm-hmm. It's unethical.
Key, when they think no one's looking.
Well, yeah, when they think no one's looking, and they're so arrogant because everyone, when you've got a habit of everyone else rolling over,
right,
and you've got all sorts of congressionally awarded powers. I mean, I'm telling you, at this point, still these regulators at the FTC thought I was acute annoyance, a fly in the ointment, and they were just patronizing and terrible and angry because then I knew. I had to write the book. I thought, I'm dead. I don't want to die. I mean, my company's dead. You know, they're going to kill us no matter what. There's no way out of this. And except that I've got to do something positive with this and try to build something out of it. And that is just to go right at their Achilles heel. I mean, you have to, I thought, and I write in the book about how it was like I'm a tennis player. So I'm thinking they're a power player. So what do I hit to them? Junk, drop shots, lobs, dinks. I just come at them also. So the book was a creative way to fight back. And I knew it had to be told in a very sort of compelling way. It couldn't be a whiny, yelly, annoying victim book. It had to just be, this is how they do it.
It is so good.
You know, thank you.
I love political thrillers and legal thrillers. And, you know, if I could write my book as well, I mean, half as well as this, I'd be thrilled. This is...
Because I had the Jake to hire really good editors. Because I would write and write and write. And then I'd say, okay, hang my ego at the door. Because I didn't want people to just feel acid on every page.
Right.
You know, and so, because you have to let people make their own decision. And that turned out to be the lucky break of Tyversa communicating with me in email. Because then I didn't have to tell anyone. I could let you use your own mind to come. And that's the only way you really build true team. Listen, everyone gets their own buy-in. So then the game really started then. By 2013, we had been to federal court once, and the judge in the court really chewed the FTC a new one. He was appalled. Yet you saw, once again, we assume the judicial system will save you. Well, Congress has given agencies so much power that they can't come at you until they're done with... I mean, the judicial system can't intervene until the administrative process is done with the agency. So as much as he yelled and screamed at them, his ruling was, you have to sit for this. There's nothing I can do yet. And yet is years down the road and millions of dollars later. And that's a dynamic they get you. The years down the road and the millions of dollars later.
Because they've got it and you don't, and the reality is those ruling, we've kind of corrupted this separation of power.
Totally, you know, corrupted it.
And that's what's held us in good stead for over 200 years is that balance of power.
And they have the blank check on the taxpayer dollars mm-hmm. to do this. Where you don't.
And that is the perfect analogy. And that is the fundamental message I want people to understand. And this is what bothers me. I say our civics books, for those of us that are still taught civics, as I was, have been wrong for a century. Because these agencies were created a century ago. The FTC just celebrated their 100th anniversary. These people have been, and of course, things move so much slower. And I'm sure when they started the agencies, they did not envision it to be like they are. But they have morphed into these Frankensteins that go in front of congressional questions and are smirking, not nervous, lawyered up, contemptible. We have now seen not held accountable. That's because they've learned and grown so much. And the Congress had given them that much power. And the Congress just tossed out the whole separation of power intent. The agencies have their own courts, their own investigators. They can make their own rules. They make their own rules every few years, and they slide them past the Congress, and the Congress signs them. Because Congress is built to be inefficient and really hard. It's supposed to be hard to make law. Now, the downside of that is hard to fix law too.
Right.
And so they've had so many decades to make this mess, and then we have a Congress that's such a mess. It's really tough. So they know how to come at you. And so I had to be able to get through that process and get the funding. So I'm kind of like, you know, I think of myself as, I don't use the word no. So I just didn't pay attention to how unlikely this was. I went to DC. I started relationship building. I went to House Oversight. I met people. I joined the Federalist Society. I started networking and telling my story, not with myself on fire, even though I was, because I can tell you, anyone sees you stressed out and looking like a victim, they run away.
Right.
It's just the human condition, folks. Everyone's got problems, and they are very polite, and they tend to run away, especially members of Congress. So, see, that's the fastest way to get injuries is tell everyone, help me, and they all hurt each other getting out the door.
Right.
So that wasn't going to work. But what I did was I met. Throughout that network, I met Daniel Epstein, who's the head of Cause of Action. And Cause of Action is a nonprofit house oversight law firm. And nonprofit government oversight law firm. And they take on cases like this for government oversight. So, boom, level playing field. The second the FTC sued me, they kicked in and started defending me. So now the playing field just went level. And don't think I didn't enjoy that kind of surprise for them. Because they're so used to bullying. I was like, they put out this scathing press release, and they were really, it was beautifully written. And the next thing you know, we put out a press release hitting them just as hard 3 years. That's never happened to them. So it was game on. And really, I think we've probably a great time to break in a second.
Yeah.
But the game was just teed up. So then they started. Then Tyversa sued me for defamation for the book. And my dad sadly passed away a month later. Mm-hmm. And everything went in the air. And people were leaving the company. And everything was starting to implode. And then they deposed 40 people. Doctors, vendors, customers, people that left the company 6 years before. They were on full shock and awe, temper tantrum, revenge mode. And we're like, bring it. Because we know what's behind this and we can wait it out and go through it. So it was the beginning of a raging battle.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to hear the next part to this, because obviously we're going to need to have you back. And please get the book, read the book. I promise you, you'll need a few days to catch up on your sleep because you want to get through it faster. Great having you on here. So what I'm hoping is that our audience, between Pro Advocate Radio and Atlanta Legal Experts and the business radio community, that everyone's getting some takeaways from this. And I'm sure I'll probably have to listen to this 2 or 3 times, because you said some things that I know I'm going to want to remember and share again. So thank you for provoking us. And I'm going to go talk to my computer security guy.
Well, yeah.
Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, James O'Brien, and Deb Beecham, founder and director of My Advocate Center. And Deb, why don't you introduce our roundtable and our special guest?
So we're back with Mike Daugherty of LabMD and the author of The Devil Inside the Beltway. And we have Emily Rowell, the host of Atlanta Legal Experts, Rich Casanova with Business Radio X, and myself and James O'Brien. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
What's next, Mr.
Okay,
Mike?
So that is where the book ended. And then what was in this next part actually goes much faster. So to bring you up to date, this is where you take a huge risk, you throw it out there and see what happens, and kaboom. If I would have told you what was going to happen, you thought I was nuts. The book really, I mean, I got the book to House Oversight. A lot of people read it. They didn't do anything. They were upset about it. But, you know, they watched the behavior of the FTC. By January of 2014, I had lost key employees. We were bleeding cash. We had had our attention totally diverted by the government to our survival. And we couldn't really adapt and move forward in the medical environment because we had our hands tied. We closed. So everyone lost their job, which was terrible. The landlord still's chasing us. And you just get created with this domino effect of problems. But then on April of 2014, there was a miracle, because a guy that worked inside Tyversa called and told me he just walked out of the company, and that everything, there's so many things that was said about the case was a lie, and that the file was never out there in cyberspace, and that they came in and took it. And a lot of things that he told me I can't disclose, but it created. It was bigger than me. It was bigger than him. He was terrified. He was apologetic and went to Congress and let them know that not only had there been representations made to me about my company, but also about national security issues. And one of the things was there was a Marine One helicopter story right after Obama had become inaugurated the first time, where they said his plans were found in Iran, and that turned out to be false. And the media was duped, and Obama was duped, and everyone was duped. On my book, there's one red eye and one blue eye, because this is a bipartisan issue. We have to transcend the party thing with this stuff. And so I went to Congress with that additional information, and just their heads blew up. They couldn't believe it, and they started an investigation. And so suddenly this gets so surreal, the power of the pen and the power of just honesty and patience. And but patience, and luckily I had, when they shove you in survival, that all goes, but they couldn't shove me in survival because I had a successful career in this country, that I had enough bank so I could fight back. You learn who your friends are and aren't. A lot of people run away that shouldn't, in the business community as well, unfortunately, but still that didn't surprise me. So I was just patient. And then ISA started investigating, and then I testified in front of House Oversight in July, and it was amazing. The day before that I testified, I get a call from Politico and Bloomberg, and Senator Jay Rockefeller sending letters out to the press, like a red herring, like this is a bad hearing, and they're intervening. And it was incredible to observe the agency play the Democratic network in Congress to screw this hearing up and to confuse. And you see, when you're making accusations, you have to have the story right. But when you're defending yourself, you just have to confuse everyone. And Elijah Cummings and Jay Rockefeller were sending out letters, a senator saying, out letters about a House hearing. So on the one hand, very few reporters were like, why are they so upset? Most of them were like, oh, okay. And so while the hearing was very powerful, the media didn't pick it up because the senator and the representative had a really, really good trick in exploiting these young cub reporters' bias. And so the whole purpose of the oversight interaction was to get this whistleblower criminal immunity. And you needed four Democrats to get immunity. You have to have 2/3 of a committee. And so we could never get that. So by October, the judge went to the Justice Department himself, and he got criminal immunity just before Thanksgiving. So that took months. Now the FTC is just flopping around like a fish on a dock, and there are behind the scenes things going on. They are way not happy. And we FOIA documents, and you see Edith Ramirez communicating with people in Congress and her people in the FTC. And I mean, you're seeing the tentacles of the administrative state and the administration going through, and how interactive this club is, and how they try to smack down FOIA. And now the trial, I was on trial in May and June, and he came in and pled the fifth, and that stopped the trial. The FTC has put their case up. They've rested. I'm on trial. Now we start again May 5th. So everyone's waiting. Everyone, the press, the Congress, everyone's waiting for this May. So here's that we are.
Wow.
This is an amazing show. Rich Kasson over here with Business Radio X, and Emily wearing the hat as a guest. A listener observer, you're the host of Atlanta Legal Experts. I got a couple of questions, but Mike answered quite a few of them. But did you have any wanted to follow
no,
up?
No, I on just a, I.
It's intriguing, right?
I'm fascinated. I can't even start to express what I mean. I feel like I'm watching a movie.
Right.
Like
right.
It is. Everyone says that, and Clint Eastwood has read the book.
Oh, nice. Oh,
But how did you feel the day before you went to Congress? And
I was so calm. I've always been.
It seems like you would have been.
I was just calm. It's true. It's just calm. I had my mother, and my brother-in-law were brought up to D.C. to watch, and they were just like, "Oh, how could you see Elijah Cummings say such terrible things about you?" Because I had seen the Democratic staffers before, trying to convince him because they were so paranoid of the Republicans. So they brought me in there, and I thought, "Well, I really broke through with those guys." Elijah Cummings is like, "Mr. Doherty said the Federal Trade Commission in his book, The Devil Inside the Beltway, were terrorists." And he he's like throwing mud at me, and I'm like, this guy hasn't read the book. He is sitting here helping his cronies. He's got no idea what's going on, and the reporters are lapping it up like dogs at a water bowl in the middle of the desert. This is hilarious, and my mother's wondering why I can take it, and I'm like, Mom, he's hammering me. The boomerang's going to come around. This is fantastic. This, you know, it'll all work out, but it was an honor. It's an absolute honor to watch the process work. It's a great education.
Well, sitting here wearing a couple of hats, I was doing some social media. I can't imagine when this show, like Deb mentioned at the top of the hour, you want to listen to this and listen to it again. This is going to go viral big time. And I have to let everybody know in the studio, we have only about 5 minutes left here. They're laughing because I'm holding it up to my forehead. Yeah, which normally I do this. But meanwhile, maybe just a last question here for you. But I want to thank Deb and James for allowing us to sit in on this show. I mean, what a great show. Yeah. And I did read kind of the synopsis of your book. I just got the book the other day. I haven't got a chance to read in its entirety, but certainly I will. My perspective is, from a business perspective, what would your LinkedIn profile look like now or in the next up on the horizon? Will it be, what now, right? Are you looking at developing another business? And I had a question, we probably don't have time for this, maybe off the air. You know, what were your numbers at its heyday in terms of volume, in terms of clients? And where would it be 7 years? Because this is a 7-year span. Any idea where it would be now?
You know, at our peak, we were breathing down 10 million. Oh. I mean, and you know, it's hard to say because Obamacare is such a curveball. And that was the problem, is they took all our energy away from adapting out of urology. We were trying to get to breast pathology and molecular. And we could be 30, 40 million.
Easily.
We had such a – and I learned because – what's happening in medicine is everyone's just sucking up the insurance care. And
I need an idea where your competitors are at, or what kind of volume they're doing, or where they're doing. Well,
everyone's diversified out, and the markets have changed, so it's hard to say. I mean, typically, a lot of these guys in this market space like spin off and sell out and cash out, and that's also would have been an option, but I never really wanted to do that. But
So back to the LinkedIn profile. Does that currently or in the future, is it going to be author? Another business you're going to dabble into in the future? Are you going to go into government? Where's
You know, I'm flying to DC tomorrow, and I'm going to New Hampshire to work with I have two strategists on this, and I crack up because I'm so busy with what's still going on. My LinkedIn profile is lacking, but they
not
want
LinkedIn specifically, but where's your future in government?
Well, I think I'd have a heart attack if I had to work in. I don't know. I'm so.
Truthful?
The system is tough. It's tough. It's that Congress is war.
So author?
And I like to fight, but I don't know if I'd be as effective. So author, I hope that I am author, speaker, defender of corporations. And I hope big corporations, because I need to eat, you know, and so I'm litigating. And hopefully I'll have successful litigation. Hopefully I'll be able to pierce the lack of accountability in the government and get them as well and litigate. But hopefully I will be speaking, writing, and clanging the bell for business.
Where is that business card that you showed me? I want to read.
Cyber Defense Magazine?
Yeah, can you explain that?
So Cyber Defense Magazine, this is what happens when you just stand up and stand out. So I met Gary Milievsky a couple of years ago, and he turned out to be one of the founding guys at Homeland Security, and he's a big entrepreneur in New Hampshire, and he's also the founder of Snoopwall, and he hooked me up with Cyber Defense Magazine. So I was at RSA last week writing for them because for platform. So so much of my media now is not just about the book. I just was on national TV. My mother's like, what do you know about that? They said, Michael Dougherty, cyber defense expert. Well, cybersecurity expert. Will now talk about the White House hack. And I did. And I got it. I educated them. And it was a great hit. So I don't know. You know, I'm spending a lot of time in DC, and I'm hopefully going to be able to advocate and eat while I advocate in defending business and small business, because we have no voice. I'll tell you, folks, we have no voice. We're so busy, just like doctors are so busy.
So busy.
No
yeah.
voice.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you all for being here. It's a very, very intriguing topic and very enjoyable. Folks, pick up the book. Michael, one last time, tell everybody where to find it.
The Devil Inside the Beltway.com, Amazon, iTunes, ebook, audiobook, hardcover, softcover.
Thank you, Mike, and you'll have to let me know when you're back in Atlanta.
Oh. Yeah, I live here permanently, which means once a month.
This show is brought to you by My Advocate Center, the voice for families and family law advocates. Learn more at myadvocatecenter.com.